What's going on, everybody? This is the I Am Pitts podcast, and I'm your host, Dexter Pitts, otherwise known as Dex or DP. With me today, I have a very special guest. His name is Border Patrol Agent Chris Cabrera. He is the spokesman for the National Border Patrol Council and Local 3307. What's going on, Chris?
How you doing, man? It's good to see you.
Not too bad, man. I want to go ahead and say thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come in here and chat with me today and chat with the people.
No, not a problem, man. I actually follow you on see what's going on in your neck of the woods, and it's quite interesting to see what you guys go through on a daily basis. It's pretty damn insane.
It is. You know, I told my wife and my friends, I was like, so if I would have stayed on the border, I would be dealing with some craziness right now, or if I came back here, I would still be dealing with some craziness. So it really don't matter. The craziness needs to follow me. All right, man. So before we get started, I have a confession. I need to apologize to you all. Man, so I don't know if you remember, but I remember when I used to listen to the podcast, The Green Line, back in the day. Y'all had a contest. And on that contest, I won one of the contests. And you shipped me this really, really, really nice, expensive Gerber. Well, I got to tell you, brother, I had put that thing in my boot one day when I was walking out in the desert chasing a group down in Naco. It is gone. The desert has that Gerber, man. I'm so upset.
Yeah, you know what, man? I get a lot of knives. I'm a knife person. I usually end up cutting myself within a couple of days, but I try not to get expensive knives anymore because I lose them after if they last me 3 or 4 months, that's a good knife. I mean, usually I lose them to fall in a river or somewhere.
I learned that real quick working on the border, man. Don't bring, you know, get your best gear, but be selective about what you take out there, boy, because the desert will swallow it up quick, man. Climbing over that rocky terrain and in the mountains, stuff falls off of your gear quick. So yeah, man, I'm still upset about that one, but you know, I'll recover from it eventually. All right. So, man, like I said, before we get started, I have one real good question to ask you. Usually I have a bunch of questions, but this is going to be the icebreaker. Where does the best Mexican food come from in the U.S.?
You know, man, it depends on what you're looking for, but I'm partial to Texas Mexican food. I think the border region, McAllen, has some of the best, with the exception of those street tacos. And I hate to say it, but I think Brownsville's got us beat on that. You know, and then on top of that, the barbacoa, I know everybody likes that stuff. The best I've ever had is in San Antonio. But the Mexican food in general down here in the valley, I mean, once you go past San Antonio, for the most part, I mean, it's not real Mexican food until you get right on the border.
Man, you know, I learned about some good Mexican food when my time in Arizona, man. I had some amazing Mexican food. Now that I'm back here in Kentucky, I'm like, what is this garbage? Get it out my face.
Yeah, no, I know how it is, man. I spent 6 years in the military in Hawaii, so I got spoiled with that beach. And then when I came back to Texas, I was like, yeah, no, this is not a beach. So kind of the same thing, you know?
Yes, sir, man. Well, with that said, we're going to go ahead and get into it, man. So first, like you said earlier, you were part of the Green Line podcast back in the day. Can you tell me how you got into that?
Yeah, you know, a few years back, we kind of started pushing hard with our media program, at least in the Rio Grande Valley, because other parts of the Border Patrol were getting a lot of media coverage as far as what was needed. But we were the busiest and nobody was focusing on us down there. So we started getting a little loud. Next thing you know, some guys in San Diego started a podcast for Border Patrol agents. And I just kind of fell into that by, you know, I guess luck. And it was pretty good. You know, we got to, you know, as agents, we spent a lot of time in the vehicle and having to hear something that has something to do with you, what's going on in the Border Patrol. You know, we had some stations that picked it up nationally and you know, just having a podcast platform. So I did that for a few years and then I kind of filtered out and, you know, just kind of faded off. So it was good while it lasted. I had a good time. And you know, whenever you can bring things to people's attention, mainly your people, your Border Patrol agents, that way they know what's going on from a union standpoint, it's good. And then if the public picks up on it and hears what's going on in our life, maybe they'll, you know, echo it for us and get the story out there.
Man, Lance, I love that podcast. I started listening when I started applying for the Border Patrol, and I was just learning as much as I could about what was going on out there. And I was so excited once I actually got hired to actually get out there and, you know, be on the green line with you all, man. And like I say, I tell a lot of people, they ask why I came back. I tell them the Border Patrol is a great job. It just was not a great job for me, you know, because I was, you know, I was born and baptized in the streets to be a street cop, and making that transition for myself, period, you know, was rough. And a lot of street cops, from what I hear, had a hard time making that transition, you know, because you go from, you know, call to call to call, then all of a sudden you're just sitting on the line, sitting on the X, watching the fence dry, or you go all day, you get no traffic, and then it's just like, man.
Yeah, and a lot of it is where you're stationed at and what you're doing. Like here in McAllen, it's the busiest in the nation, you know, not just the sector, but my station in general. I mean, we're seeing apprehensions 2,500 a day just at our station. And I worked on the boats for a while, so boats can be boring, but when something happens, I mean, it's 360 degrees around you. So you have, you know, bodies in the water, you have dope in the water, you have another boat or two, you got people on the south side pointing guns at you. So, you know, that's a really big adrenaline dump. So depending on where you're at, I mean, if I had to do it all over again, I love being in the Border Patrol, but it's changed so much in the last few years that I don't know if I would. I'm 3 years from retirement, so I'm gonna stick it out, but I don't know if I definitely don't want my kid going into this job.
Yeah, you know, and I completely understand that. You know, now I was looking for that action. Unfortunately, I did not find it at my station. Everybody told me that the Brian A. Terry station was the station to be, but when I got there, it wasn't really what I thought, you know, and I was looking for all that action. And I think that if I would have probably chose a different station, might have been a different outcome for myself. But, you know, you live and you learn. But speaking of that, so how did you win and why did you join the Border Patrol?
You know, I got out the military 98, so quite a long time ago, and ended up in San Antonio. I grew up in Texas, so ended up in San Antonio, and I never heard of the Border Patrol. Didn't even know there was a Border Patrol. I was in a mall. And I bumped into a Border Patrol recruiter, and he stopped me and he said, "Hey, you want to join the Border Patrol?" And I'm like, I don't know what that is. And he goes, "Well, you know, it's kind of like you're playing hide and go seek all day, but you're always it." And I was like, "Man, okay. sounds kind of fun." And I asked him what the pay was like, and he told me. And at the time, I was doing contract work, running you know, fiber optic lines in a hospital. And I was like, "Well, that seems like a little more fun than, you know, sitting indoors all day." So I gave it a shot, and, you know, I haven't looked back since. You know, things have changed quite a bit in the patrol. It's grown. It's gotten probably too big for its own good, but, you know, I'm on my downhill slope. So, you know, we'll finish off here and see what the next 5 years brings me.
Man, that's good, man. That's been a career, man. Have you been in that area the whole time?
Yeah, I've been in here. I've been in McAllen the whole time. I did some details out to Arizona. I did boat patrol for, I think, 6 or 7 years, which was a blast. You know, I mean, they give you a $500,000 boat, you know, 600 horsepower, and you just, you know, just tear up and down the river all day on somebody else's gas. And, you know, if it's not busy, at least you're having fun. So, I mean, it wasn't a bad gig. And, you know, I got to learn to drive a boat and do all that fun stuff. And, you know, Border Patrol's got some good stuff to do if you want to have a canine, if you want to be on the horse patrol, ATVs, motorcycles. You know, they got all kinds of fun crap to do out there.
Oh, yeah, man. But you got to earn your way to it, what I learned. Now, I remember watching the commercials thinking I was going to go in doing all that stuff. They was like, "Nah, buddy, you're going to sit in this processing cell for the first 4 or 5 years."
Yeah, and I think with any federal agency, there's always that dirty little secret. Like, the Border Patrol has those X's and those processing centers. And, you know, the first few years you're stuck there with marshals, it's courtroom duty. You know, anywhere you go, you're going to have kind of that nonsense. And luckily, I'm over that hump. But I guess seniority sucks until you have it, you know?
That's right, brother. I'm learning that now coming back on the PD. Lost all my seniority, but I'm happy to be home, though. Yeah. Let me go ahead and ask you, man. So right now, what is going on at the border? Because there's a lot of stuff the news is not talking about. I know they're trying to keep people out from the border from seeing what's really going on. Can you tell me from your perspective what's going on and what the agents are dealing with on a day-to-day basis down there with this current crisis?
Yeah, you know, in 2013, we had, I remember the day, we had a group of 295 people walking up a road, And our supervisor called for, he called for the buses and the vans. And they said, okay, we'll send you a bus and a van. And he goes, no, I need all the buses and all the vans. And ever since then, it's just been a steady stream of people turning themselves in. There's a loophole in the law that if they claim asylum, that we have to hear that case. So we started releasing people because there's nowhere to hold them. Well, when President Trump came in, you know, he was trying to enact certain things to stop the flow. So he got with Mexico and started a Remain in Mexico program, the Migrant Protection Protocol, meaning if we catch you or if you turn yourself in, we'll send you back to Mexico and you can wait there. It's kind of the, it's called the safe harbor law, safe third country law. And then with Title 42, with COVID restrictions. So everybody that was coming in were going right back to Mexico. So once he did that, that actually, it didn't stop it, but it slowed it down drastically to just a trickle. And so we were operating on that for a couple of years or for the last year. And then when the new administration came in, they did away with the Migrant Protection Protocol, right? Which, you know, it's their ballgame. They can make the rules however they want. You know, that's their job. But by doing that, they didn't put anything in place to catch the overflow. It's like if you're working on your sink and you got to take the pipes out, well, you got to put a bucket there to catch what comes out, right? And so what they did, they took this policy out, which is fine, but they didn't put anything there to catch it. And so now it just went nuts. February, we caught over 100,000. Last month, I think we're well over 200,000. And they're just exploiting this loophole. Can you imagine if in like in the PD terms, if you had like a DUI charge and if these guys could just say a magic word, you'd have to let them go. And in a sense, that's what we have. We catch them or they come walk up to us and we know we have them by law, but then they say the magic word and we got to let them go. And everybody knows it. And so now it's overwhelming us. On top of the people turning themselves in, we still have huge amounts of people that are running, trying to get away. We have drug smuggling. We have human smuggling. We're seeing kids, and I kid you not, 3 years old that are coming here by themselves. They're in groups of people, but they're completely alone. And the worst part is the parents are already here. So they send their kid in care of a smuggler, and they're here in the United States somewhere. And we get that kid and then we send them to the parent. But you can't leave your kid alone, you know, at Walmart where you run in and get milk for 5 minutes or CPS is coming and you're going to go to jail.
Exactly.
But you can put this kid on top of a train for 3 countries and get him back at the end of the day. And I get it. You know, times are tough and, you know, things are bad in their country. But I think you would agree with me that if your son or your daughter had to make that trip, there's nobody better than to do it than with you.
Exactly. You
know, nobody's going to protect that kid more than the father. But the father's here, nice and warm in a bed, while their 7-year-old daughter or 6-year-old son is braving this stuff by themselves. And that's just not right in my eyes.
It's not, man. You know, I saw the video the other day where the smuggler was dropping the 2 kids over the border wall fence. And I was just amazed. And I was like, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing, man. It's just nothing. It just, they dropped those kids. They jumped down the fence themselves and ran back south, ran back into Mexico. Those kids were just sitting there no more than 4 or 5 years old, man.
Yeah, and then the rest of that story is the parents are already here in the United States. So we just gave those parents back those kids. And I mean, that's how much they thought of their kids, where they just left them in care of a smuggler. You know, we had this group the other day of little kids. I say little. There was an 18-year-old in the group. It was like 15 of them, between 15 and 4. And one of the little girls, about 7, 8 years old, was telling us, she goes, yeah, when we were coming up, there was more of us, but some of them just disappeared. And then we got on the train, that big train that they ride, the they call it La Bestia, the beast.
Yeah.
And she goes, we got up on the train. And then, you know, on the first night, 2 of the kids fell off while it was moving. And then a third one, some guy, I guess, kicked one of the kids and the kid fell between the cars while it was moving. And so a lot of these kids don't make it, but nobody knows that they're not, you know, they're just kind of lost. You know, we don't know about them because we're not looking for them because we don't know that they're coming, you know, and the parents aren't going to say, oh, my kid disappeared somewhere. You know, and it's just sad. We had a girl the other day, 13 years old, that from the time of apprehension until we got her on the bus to the processing center for like 3 hours, all she would do was cry. And I mean, Lord knows what would happen to that poor young girl, you know, but, and her parents are already here, you know, and how can you do that to a kid? And by having this beacon of light saying, hey, come over here, whatever you got to do to get here, and we'll let you go. That's doing a disservice to these kids because they're risking it all. And it's really not worth the risk.
It's not, you know, and I still remember, like I said, I was only out on the border for 6 months and I saw enough in that time. And there wasn't even a crisis going on at that time. They just seeing what people risked their life and limbs and they spend their life savings to try to get to the most amazing country in the world. You know, and it also kills me when I hear these protesters in the street saying, this is the most evil, the most racist, the most horrible country in the world. And I'm like, well, then why are these people doing everything possible within their grasp to get to the United States of America if it's so horrible and it's so bad?
Yeah.
That these people don't even, they don't live here, but they see what it is here. And we have people that live here that are just constantly dogging our country and saying the most horrible things. And it makes no sense, you know? No, and I tell people there's such a thing as, I don't believe in white privilege, but I believe in American privilege, and being born in this country is a privilege, and everybody wants that American privilege. And that's why we have this crisis going on right now.
So you have so many people that come from other countries and are able to do stuff that they never would have been able to do in any other country, you know, and that's the American dream. You know, we don't have to be born with a certain name. We don't have to be born into a certain bloodline in order to gain stuff here in this country. If you work hard, you'll get it. And I think, unfortunately, we see a lot of this younger generation, not all, but we see a lot of people that they just want it handed to them. And I guess what they say is, you know, hard times bring tough men, and, you know, soft times breed soft men, you know. And I think maybe that's what it is, you know, some of us, maybe we just weren't strict enough and tough enough and made our kids work hard enough, because now they think it's put my hand out and it's coming to me for free.
Oh, definitely, man. You know, and that's one of the biggest things I've learned here is that you really get, like, you could do anything. I think they said that the most successful population of people in the country right now is Nigerians. Mm-hmm. They know how to work. What they value in their culture is education and stuff like that. Unlike, you know, the culture in Black America is the complete opposite. And I see that from working within the Black community. And like I said, we got to change that culture. Like I said, it's not the country. No, we're trying to change the country, but we're not trying to change those things within our culture that are, you know, holding us back. But let me ask you, man. What's that?
No, it's hard work that does it. You know, it's the only thing that can do is the work.
It does. I'll tell you, I learned how to work hard on the Border Patrol in the academy, brother. Man, so how is all this affecting the morale of the agents?
You know, it's tough on the morale. You know, the last couple of years, we've had a good patrol agent in charge of my station, and then with the administration, and we had the backing of a good portion of the country, law enforcement wise, not all, but a good portion of it. And then things just all of a sudden just switched, you know, it just flip flopped on us. And it's rough for us because, one, you know, we weren't hired to babysit, you know, but unfortunately, a lot of us are babysitting now. We're not able to do the duties that we were sworn to do. We're seeing dope loads in cameras that we have people in the area, but we can't respond to them. 1,000 pounds, 2,000 pounds of marijuana getting away because we're too busy tied up with, you know, processing or at least doing the field intake sheet on 200 people on the levee. So we're seeing our job duties are being disregarded because of all this stuff that's going on. And morale is taking a hit. I mean, I think we've seen it nationwide. We're seeing a lot of police officers putting in their retirement papers as soon as they're eligible because of the way things are going with the country. And we're seeing a lot of that with Border Patrol. Usually some of these guys stick around 5-6 extra years until they're mandatory. And a lot of guys right now are pulling the plug as soon as they're eligible. And I hate to see that.
And are y'all not getting enough new recruits to fill those slots? Because I know here in Louisville and across other major departments, we are not. I believe we have a class in currently and they're going to graduate soon. I think it's like maybe 16 or 14 people.
Oof.
Yeah.
I think we're doing a little better than that. You know, unfortunately, we're staffing a larger area, you know, but we're, by no means are we keeping up with what we're losing. You know, we're not retaining enough people to begin with, people that aren't necessarily retirement age. For instance, If you come down to the border area and you're not from here and you end up, say, you know, in Southern Arizona or West Texas, like I got a friend that lives in West Texas. It's 2.5 hours just to get to a Walmart. Can you imagine that? 3.5 hours to get to a hospital. And, you know, the wife is like, yeah, no, I'm not living here. Or you come down to certain areas and you know, you have to speak Spanish to get a job. And, you know, the wife is like, hey, you know what? This isn't what I signed up for. And then ICE offers you a job close to where you're from for more money and less hours. Oh, yeah, they're going to take it. And so that's what we do. We lose a lot to other agencies, whether it's federal, state, or local agencies. We're losing a lot to other agencies.
I mean, I think half of my class is probably already gone. You know, I was class 1110. We graduated in April of 2019. And man, the amount of people I've seen that have left, a lot of them have gone to the blue side of the things, you know, CBPO to go, you know, get better stations and more money and less stress. And that's and unfortunate. More ability,
you know, and I've seen a lot go to DEA, to Marshals, FBI, you know, with the language ability and all that, you can, you know, you make yourself a little more marketable at that point.
Man, so like, man, what do the American people need to know about this crisis and what's going on at the border that the government is not telling them and trying to hide from them?
You know, I think the biggest thing people always overlook is that it's not an issue that is that affects only the border region. For instance, down here, we have a lot of heroin and meth that's coming through the Rio Grande Valley, right? But we don't have a heroin and meth problem down here. So that stuff gets up into Ohio. It's nowhere near the southern border. So whatever comes through here goes up there. And as long as people think, well, that problem's way far, 2,000-3,000 miles away from me, I don't got to worry about it. Oh, yes, you do. The other thing with all these folks coming in that they're getting released is there's no COVID restrictions. They'll tell you there's COVID restrictions in these facilities. That's why they can't let the media in, because we don't want, you know, anybody bringing COVID to these kids. Well, this area is set up for 500 people and there's like 6,000 people in there. And it's to the point, this doesn't sound believable, but it's true. These kids can't sleep on their backs because there's not enough room. So they have to sleep on their sides. That's how tightly packed they are in there. And then there's no COVID tests until after they leave. And then they're already released from our custody, so we can't quarantine them. They just get on a bus and go who knows where. They go all over the country. So whatever they're bringing, whether it's COVID, whether it's these new strains of tuberculosis we've seen, you name it, measles, mumps, we've seen all this stuff come through here. It's not staying in our part of the country. It's going to you guys.
You know, I remember working in the processing center and seeing the, you know, the UDAs in there with their blankets and we're giving them their food. And you could just see how sick some of them were. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely disgusting. And I tell people, I felt more safe out in the field than in the processing center, because you don't know what these people have as they're coming over. I believe we had a guy that died in our processing center at the Bryan and Terry station. He had a heart thing going on. And he just passed. And it was just like, you know, but everybody was blaming the agents. But I'm like, you don't realize how sick these people are already when they start this journey and they slog through the desert for weeks to get here. Then by the time they get here, they're worn out and exhausted. They're at their lowest health, you know, health and capacity.
And some of them picking up the pieces. Seen the doctor in their life, you know, some of them never seen a doctor in their life, you know. And we had that rash of people dying a couple years back, and oddly enough, every last one of them was the flu.
I remember that.
Yeah, and that's a different strain of flu that we have here, you know. So you can get the flu shot all you want, but it's a different flu. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's the sad part of it is, you know, things are going to happen and it's beyond our control. But at the end of the day, we're going to get the blame for it.
So one last question. I just saw a video the other day of the first processing coordinators that the Border Patrol is just starting. Do you think that's going to help the Border Patrol in this current mission with this crisis?
You know, I on paper, I would say yes, I think it will. But unfortunately, I don't think so. I mean, I'd like to think so, but you know, the way the patrol does things is they're hiring people, they're sending them through this academy. The academy keeps getting delayed for COVID. And then some of these guys have already quit because they think they're going to be out there in the field and they're not. When I think the patrol, all they would have to do is just find some guys that are just retiring right about now and say, hey, you want to come back to work? No academy, just switch your shirt, jump on over there and start processing. So I think it has the potential to help, but unless they get more of these guys quicker, it's just going to drag on and on and on. I think our station, we're slated to get maybe two.
Two? You know,
two.
Two? That's not going to cut it.
You know, and we just detailed in 300 people to help process, and we're getting two. So, yeah, you know, hopefully it'll help. But I think that's the problem right now with the government, since, you know, Border Patrol is so big and it's just such a cumbersome animal. You know, it just takes so long to get anything done. And man, I kind of miss the days when it was smaller and somebody just said, hey, I got an idea, and boom, put it into play and you're moving.
Work, man. Now it's a bureaucracy, brother. You know, and I tell people I would have stayed with the Border Patrol had it not been for processing. That was the biggest thing for me. It was like, you know, I signed up to be out in the field. I signed up to be in the action. The field was rough, but I loved it. But and when that dude told me, he was like, hey, get used to being in here. I was like, brother, let me tell you, my Spanish is not good, and you're not about to keep me in here in these four walls trying to ask people, ¿tiene miedo? You know, do you have fear? Yeah. I was done at that point.
Yeah, it seems like you get that allergy to the fluorescent lights, man. You just, you know, you didn't sign to be a Border Patrol agent. You want to be out there, you know, it's like being a kid again. You just get better toys, you know, but instead you're inside like school again. And that's not where anybody wants to be. Everybody wants to be out there playing in the mud, you know. That's the fun part.
It was, man. I say I enjoyed it, man. And I'm very proud to have been a part of Border Patrol Class 1110, an agent at the Brian A. Terry Station. It was a heck of an experience, and a lot of people don't get that experience. And this is why I tell people, as a Black person in America, I have literally been able to do everything I've wanted. And no one has ever told me, because I'm Black, that I can't. I wanted to be a soldier. I became an infantryman and a machine gunner. I did it. I got out. Guess what? I wanted to become a police officer. I did it. I wanted to go to college and get a degree. I did it. I said I want to be a Border Patrol agent. It took me three times to pass that test, you know, but it was President Trump that said, hey, if you're a current, you know, police officer and you're a veteran, you don't have to worry about the Spanish test. And the clouds opened up, and I was like, thank God, an opportunity to finally accomplish my dream. And I remember getting to the Border Patrol Academy, and the academy was so rough and so tough. I wanted to quit every day. But like you said, hard work perseveres every time. And I slogged through. I came out in my Spanish class, like, I believe it was, I was second to last on the list, on the bottom of the list for Spanish out of 85, because, you know, everybody else mostly spoke Spanish except me. But I put in the time and the work and the effort. And that's what I want people to know on this show, that tune in and listen, that, dude, you can accomplish anything you want in this country. And it takes hard work. And realize, a lot of y'all are scared of the people that are coming here because y'all not willing to work hard. And these people are willing to work hard and do jobs that y'all don't want to do. So you're going to have to step your game up, Americans. You're going to have to step it up, man.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm good. You know, my job is safe for now. But, you know, if you have, you know, low skill, and these guys are coming, and they're going to work for less, and they're going to work twice as hard, and, you know, better step it up, like you said.
Yes, sir. Well, brother, I'm going to go ahead and let you go, Chris. I truly, truly appreciate your time today for coming to speak to us about this issue, man. Brother, you have a wonderful day. You take care of yourself, and you watch your six down there on the border, man. Just know,
likewise, man.
Y'all got my support here. I'm always part of the Green Line family, even though I don't wear the uniform anymore. Always. All love and respect for what y'all do, man. Like, y'all have a very important and vital mission, and a lot of people do not realize that and see what you all keep from happening in this country.
Well, likewise, brother. It's good talking to you. Hey, send me your address. Email me your address or text me, and I'll send you some goodies out there.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it, my man. Chris, you take it easy, brother.
Likewise.
Yes, sir.